But then we get a big bomb drop that we need to talk about. And that's that we now fucking know, finally, where Riverdale is.
Yes.
Riverdale is a small town in Rockland County. Hello, pals and gals, and welcome to another episode of XOXO Riverdale. I'm Luigi Vito.
I wasn't prepared to come with an Italian name.
Yes, I know. I sprung that on you as a little fun surprise. Because we're talking about Citizen Lodge, the latest episode of the Riverdale saga today. We're really excited to get into it. This is your favorite Riverdale podcast. Absolutely your favorite, if you're listening. That is two adult comedians discussing this show that is for increasingly just no audience.
Our moms.
Who is this episode for? I don't know. I liked it. Yeah, if you like what you hear, you can, you know, best thing you can do is subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And also you can rate and review us on iTunes. We're on all the social media if you want to talk with us. And actually, we got a tweet from someone this week that we wanted to talk about, which might be a great way to start the episode before we get into the actual discussion of the Citizen Lodge.
Yeah, we got a very insightful tweet that was immediately actually more supportive than shut down, but rendered useless by like the end of the first act of this episode.
Yeah.
But it was pointed out to us that while Sweetwater River is freshwater, they were down at the tuna warehouse and tuna are saltwater fish.
Oh my God, of course. That is so ridiculous.
But it does
ridiculous.
Mean it's a coastal town.
Because it's tuna fishing.
Right, well, because it has the salt water. And other than, like, I guess they could be in Utah, but I don't think they have tuna in Salt Lake.
Well, do you think that the tuna warehouse is just where they store the tuna and that area of Rockland County?
Yeah, that's, yeah, we'll get to fucking that. Yeah.
But yeah, do you think that, or do you think that they're fishing the tuna close to there?
It seemed like it was like a fishery.
Yeah.
But I don't know, and I don't know that they do either.
I don't think they do. I think they just threw in a tuna warehouse.
Yeah, it feels like the spaghetti warehouse restaurant in the Midwest, where it's like, I don't think they store spaghetti here.
I didn't know that that was a thing. It's called the spaghetti warehouse?
Yeah,
that's a shame, because it sounds delicious.
I know, and that's why we stopped.
Yeah, give me a crate of spaghetti.
Yep, and then it did not live up to what we wanted it to be.
I have some fun, like, personal Archie Comics news, just to share with our listeners if they're interested. I got asked this week to interview Archie creator Dan Parent for FlameCon, which is the LGBTQ comic book convention that normally happens in New York around this time every year, but for the last few years has been virtual. So I interviewed him yesterday. The interview is airing today, I believe live, but then I believe it should be recorded as well. So if you go to either geeksout.com or flamecon.com, you should be able to find that. And it was a really fun discussion. Dan's like super fun. He created Kevin Keller. So that character is now 11 years old. And it was sort of now about that character's legacy when it comes to like creating inclusive characters for like different intellectual property. So we had kind of a fun conversation about that. And then we touched on like his independent comics work, and we touched on some of the really fun Archie crossovers that they've done in the last few years with different bands that he's a big fan of, including our faves, the B-52s, that he drew that whole thing and kind of instigated that. So it was fun, and it was like long long winding, and also like it was like a nice reminder for me as to like why I love these characters. Because the show is, is hard. So just, yeah, if you're interested in that, it was a good conversation.
Yeah, I'll say comic book fun. Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, the comics are back.
Yes, there's two new Sabrina comics that have been announced. There is a continuation of the series, and then there's a continuation of Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which is the, it's a little confusing, but it's the series that the Netflix show was based on. And they're te separately, they're two different continuities, technically. Now, Archie has had a bunch of issues with delays over the last 2 years. And certainly some of them are pandemic related, but a lot of them are sort of schedule related of the creators and that kind of those kinds of issues. So despite the fact that those comics were announced, which I'm excited about, I'll basically believe them when they're on the stands and when I can actually read them, that they're actually a thing that exists. Especially because RAS is writing one of them and he just has a lot on his plate right now, like just to be perfectly nice about it. Something that Dan announced yesterday that's new news, that's actually fun and our listeners might care about, is Dan is kickstarting a Kevin Keller omnibus that's going to be a 700-page hardcover book that basically includes all of Kevin Keller's appearances up to this point, which is really fun, and also like a lot of behind the scenes material that Dan compiled, and it's basically like it's his definitive take on the character and his tribute to the character, and it's like he's kickstarting it, but with the full permission of Archie, so it's probably going to be like a pretty beautiful book. And for fans, it's sort of a fun way to check in on that character now that he's existed for such a long time, and like and the landscape sort of culture I feel has changed so much since he was introduced. So that's pretty fun. So let's talk about Citizen Lodge. So this is the way I love to start these conversations. Did you like this episode? How did you feel about it?
Well, let's just say the first note thing I wrote was ugh, and then there are a lot of question marks in my
Yeah, there might have been some plot is inconsistencies and confusions that I didn't really notice because I was enjoying the perform the I was I enjoy this episode. This show, I wish I could just flat out dislike this show at this point, and this could just be like a hate watch podcast. But stuff happens on Riverdale that keeps sucking me back in. And after the insanity that was the last episode with that Hair musical number, and the drug trip, and how nobody was behaving like a real human being for the whole episode. All of a sudden, we have this episode that is pretty grounded in some like very hu like human and understandable characteristics, the need to appease your family, the need to look after each other, the need to prove yourself in the world, like all of these concepts I thought were dealt with like in a fairly grounded way, especially for this show, and I really appreciated this. And this felt like an episode where it was allowed to move at a bit of a more regular pace, and it didn't throw a whole lot of shit at you and just expect you to process it. And I really liked that about it, and I thought all the performances, strike that, I thought most of the performances were very good in this episode.
Ooh, who are you looking down on here?
Well, we'll get into it, but I thought that Charles Melton specifically had to do a lot of heavy lifting in the early part of the episode, and I thought that it was a little hard for him, and it kind of surprised me because I like him quite a lot. But I really liked Mark Consuelos in this episode. I thought he was like pretty understated, which was great and much needed for the show. And I loved Michael Consuelos. I think Michael Consuelos is great, and I wish there was a way to write him into the show more, actually.
I haven't I was gonna say I haven't seen him in anything else, but like that doesn't mean he's not in stuff all the time.
Yeah, but I found him really intriguing, his portrayal of Hiram, Jaime, in this
Yeah.
episode. And he's like cute too. Like he's like a real dreamboat. So
You
I
know,
like.
because two attractive parents don't always make an attractive kid.
That's correct. So good job with them
Yeah.
creating Michael Consuelos.
Congrats
Yeah.
on your kid's face.
Congrats on your kid's face. Now he can have an acting career. Good for everyone. Great. So yeah, so Citizen Lodge, obviously named after the film Citizen Toxie, Toxic Avenger 4. Yep.
That's why they made all those Rosebud mentions.
Yes, yeah. No, named after Citizen Kane, which is a movie that I stand behind, although a lot of people at this point are like, well, it was only notable because of when it came out, and now it's not really very important anymore. But I think it's actually a really compelling movie. This episode didn't really connect that much with the plot of Citizen Kane, other than the fact that it was the rise of sort of a tyrannical man, I feel. And then they mentioned Rosebud at the beginning in Juggy's narration. But that was kind of it.
That was it.
Yeah.
That was it. So right off the bat, he's like Hiram's talking about his backstory, and he like says that he didn't grow up in Riverdale, and then like this whole flashback is him growing up in Riverdale. Because he said
Yeah,
that, and I was like, "Were you like in the flashback episodes? That's weird." And then it's like, "Yeah, he just said this one real weird wrong thing up top."
he's already a young man by the time he gets to Riverdale.
Yeah, but I would say that like he's been around. Like he presented it like he had come to Riverdale when he was in his 30s.
That's fair. Yeah, totally. Yeah, and yeah, he was. He really seemed like he was in NYC as a kid.
But full record scratch, really audible, weird record scratch in the episode.
Yeah.
They had to move.
That's also something about this episode that I want to touch on that I enjoyed, but definitely is, was maybe confusing for the audience. At the beginning of the flashback, it was New York City 1988. And then, really, the entire look of the episode felt like a 70s Scorsese film. Big collars, leather. Even the club noted that they kept hitting up in Riverdale, that where the drugs were coming in and out of, had like all these posters outside of the club that said "punk." It didn't feel very late '80s, but I did think that this was a really well conceived episode in terms of having a full idea of how it was going to look and feel. And I appreciated that. It delved into the mafia, like the mafia movie genre, in a really gleeful way that I appreciated, and
It was
felt good
bad
feeling
timing
to.
on the episode's part, but
Bad timing on the episode's part. Why? Just because.
like it's the second episode back.
Yes.
It
Yeah, I was thinking about that, and like, I don't really care at this point because the actual plot is so unappealing to me that part of me was like, maybe I just want to see like five more episodes that are anthology based, that are just like the origins of all the adult characters, and then the show self cancels. Like I
Yeah, you
was like,
know.
I'd love to see an episode with Alice that's like this, and like an episode with, maybe an FP episode, and then the show can be done.
I want the Penelope
Oh,
episode.
for sure. Yeah, I should. Yeah, definitely. I feel weird that I left her out. Yeah, I'd love the Penelope origin episode for sure. Anyway,
So Hiram needs ghost guns.
yes, Hiram needs an untraceable gun.
Which it's my question mark is he doesn't already have them?
No, he decides he needs a new one, for
A
whatever
fresh one.
reason, just to give Reggie one more little task to do for him. And then we learn that the reason why Reggie's been working for Hiram is because his dad owes a whole bunch of money to Hiram, which I don't think we knew before, so that's new information. And then we get a lot in the first segment that I just want to comment on for a sec, that's Reggie's dynamic with his dad. And I did like this because I thought the writing was better than Charles Melton's performance. The writing really was an adult man trying to sort of maintain a relationship with his father, who what we know to have been physically abusive on the show. And
It
that's
felt
really
like
tricky, but I liked that it wasn't one of these Riverdale moments that's just like, Dad, you're out of my life. Goodbye. Because that's never how it works. We need to figure out ways to make peace with our family,
Yeah, it felt to me like they wrote Reggie older than Charles Melton is.
Well, that's been a hard thing with this whole season, is that now these characters are existing in sort of a strange adulthood limbo. Because I agree with you, and it felt a little like they're trying to mirror Hiram's trajectory, who in his story he was a late in his late teens, and in Reggie's story he's 27. So
Yeah, it was
it doesn't make a lot of sense. Or not 27, he's like 25, right? It's a 7 year. Yeah, so he's like 24, 25. Yeah.
It felt to me like this was a storyline that would be written for someone who has kids and like his father's dying,
Sure.
but like his dad was fine and he's still young.
I agree with you. And then there's like the scene where Reggie's dad goes to Hiram and is like, you leave my son alone. And that's like a really odd thing to be doing if you have like an adult son, so yeah, it's that wasn't the best stuff in the episode. Also just want to note that Reggie is reading at the beginning of the episode of Mighty Crusaders comic, and those are just those Red Circle heroes that we know about, that Archie owns, and they're just going to use that IP to no end.
I want to talk about Reggie and his dad selling that car to that kid.
Yes. Yep.
So the first thing I wrote was men are weird about cars.
Very much so. Yep.
And then the pinnacle of what's weird is like his dad blows the sale and Reggie comes in and like tells a story about his first car that like he's named, and I'm like, I don't care. And then he looks at this kid's dad and he goes, this is the car your son will get laid in.
Yeah.
And I was like, ew. And then like the dad was like, good point.
Yeah.
Sold. And it was like, okay.
Yeah, that's a very weird dynamic. Maybe straight fathers and their sons have a different relationship than I had with my father, but that seems odd to me. There's a lot of boundary crossing there that I don't like a lot. But somehow he sells the car. And then Hiram, or sorry, Reggie's dad goes to Hiram. This is the scene. And it's just sort of odd, like calling Reggie a fool here. I mean, is this just supposed to be Reggie's dad grasping at straws here? My son is a fool, because like Reggie is a lot of things on the show and often is somewhat inconsistent as a character, but I don't know if I understand anybody's interpretation of him as being foolish. He's always been like really quite cunning? Do you agree, or am I?
I think he's been immature but not foolish for a long time.
He's a bit of a yeah, he's a bit im yeah, he's definitely a bit immature.
It's weird. This whole episode is weird. I did write that this was the most like teen drama episode. Like there were things this episode that was like very like One Tree Hill.
Yeah, and I kind of like that more about it too. I think that's one of the reasons why I liked it, is it was less in like the realm of Crazyville and more in the realm of just like teen soap opera, which
Yeah,
I
I will
kind of want
say
this show to be, you know?
I was tweeting a lot the other night at the Yankees game because I played Paula Cole. And to be clear,
it as one does.
It was I Don't Want to Wait was the one they were playing.
Sure.
So it was like a teen drama week for me that Wednesday, Thursday jump from Riverdale into Dawson's Creek at a massive stadium.
Yeah.
Doesn't normally cover Dawson's Creek as like a theme. And I think most people only know that song from Dawson's Creek. And it was not the chorus. It was a verse.
That's so funny.
It was such a weird choice. They like gave DJ LeMahieu like a community service award and then like played that. And I'm like, I mean, he's 33, so he probably knew it, but.
Yeah, but why? Why was that a choice?
I don't think he picked it. I don't know what that was.
So then there is a interesting scene I want to discuss where Reggie basically says to his dad, Hiram is where he is, and he has never laid a hand on his wife or his daughter. And this is the beginning of like positioning Hiram as a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't totally love that because, yes, it's true. We've never seen Hiram strike the kids.
What a low bar.
But yeah, but he's very emotionally manipulative.
Yeah.
And that's always been a big part of the character. And in the past, we've described him as emotionally abusive.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly wouldn't mind a Hiram like come to Jesus moment where he like makes amends and starts working on himself. I'm cool with that, but that hasn't happened yet. So for Reggie to sort of make that comparison, I think that it's a little more sloppiness from the Riverdale gang.
Yeah.
You know, the Riverdale writers gang being just like, we're going to say this at this point to make this episode make sense, you know?
Yeah. Now here's a question that I thought of in the first act here. What happened to Hiram's illness?
He got better, quote unquote. But then at the very end of the episode, Ronnie says, was he ever sick?
Yeah.
And that is a good point. Was he doing that to manipulate them?
It was so odd.
It was just something that they, like this show happens, they throw some shit at the wall and they're like, they decide, oh, we don't really want to deal with this. And then it goes away.
Yeah, it seems like, I remember when it was happening, it seemed fairly real because things were happening to him that only we saw. So it wasn't like performative.
Yeah, like they were doing something with it. Yeah.
If we recall all the other mysteries solved, people were having conversations where we were like, they all know what was happening. It was just like practicing. So
that's right, the practicing, yeah, that we talk about a lot. What does the audience see versus what do the other characters see, and how does that logic work? Yeah,
so who knows.
So the only other thing I want to talk about before we get to the act break is just, you know, they're shining, we're in the first part of this flashback, and they're shining this New York businessman's shoes, and he forgot his wallet. But he, for some reason, has a little chunk of palladium in his pocket, which is very odd.
I did look up real quick to see if it was a radioactive element.
It isn't, is it?
It is not.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that.
It is below, like, it's towards the bottom of the table of elements, but, like, not in that, like, extra radioactive section they have tacked on at the bottom there.
Sure.
It's very close to it, but it's not in there, which is good because I was like, this is going to kill him if he's keeping that in his
pocket. Which would be awful.
Yeah.
But then we get a big bomb drop that we need to talk about.
Uh-huh.
And that's that we now fucking know finally where Riverdale is.
Yes.
Riverdale is a small town in Rockland County.
Yep.
And yeah, Rockland County is pretty near the Tappan Zee River.
Tappan Zee Bridge on the Hudson River.
Oh, sorry, on the Hudson River. Sorry. So it makes a lot of sense. And it's also a 2-hour drive from NYC.
It's less than 2 hours.
Yeah. Like if you're deep in Rockland County, it's 2 hours. Like, yeah.
I guess if you go really far west, because I'm like, if you go straight up the Hudson, that's not 2 hours.
Yeah, but that totally makes sense for a lot of what we've learned about the show, and that's great. I'm totally cool with this, and this also is one of the things that grounds this episode in Realville as opposed to in Cuckoo Town, that they actually say Rockland County, and I kind of appreciated it after all this time. I don't know how you're feeling about it.
Jersey Transit goes through there, I believe. I am looking right now on the Wikipedia for bodies of water to determine what Sweetwater River is.
Yeah.
Because it does have the Hudson there, but the Hudson, I don't believe, is what they're going for. There is, my guess is maybe the reservoir. They have a few reservoirs, which is not a river, but feels like it could kind of have that vibe because it does on a title, I believe. It's really it. A lot of lakes.
Yeah, but I appreciate this. I think this is a good thing that this happened.
Yeah.
So then, after the act break, they've moved to Riverdale. The mine collapses immediately.
Now, is this the mine from Sabrina that was haunted?
Well, I believe that those mines are, there's pathways in them that links them together. And I believe that that's been hinted at before. But because there's that barrier of the river, I feel like the Sabrina side is the one where the ghosts live, and the Riverdale side, that's not happening because Riverdale is in kind of in one world and Sabrina's in another. You know what I mean?
Okay.
But
yeah,
the mines have been mentioned before, so it's cool that you brought them up. So the mine collapses. They're shining shoes again in front of Pops. And then we get, our first, we meet Vito.
Vito Alto.
Yeah, Vito Alto. And he fucking immediately, and I kind of loved this, is like, come see me at the Cochina Sazaka. And like, I was like, oh, this is so fun. And I was like, this is like silly gibberish Italian time.
Yeah, and it part was like of me, Full Fat Tony.
Yeah, Full Fat Tony. And I totally wanted, they might as well have called that Italian restaurant, like, come visit me at the, Mona Lisa Roma. just like silly Italian things.
I wrote Who Holds Money Like That, and I don't remember what it was, but I guess someone held money real weird.
It's the way he gave Jaime the bill.
Okay.
And was like, you keep it, that was that deal. And then I liked the way this was all, I liked the way that this was all dealt with. We get Jaime asking Hermione on a date. And this is just a fun scene. I think that the two actors have a lot of chemistry, the two of them, Cammy Mendez and Michael. I really like them in all their scenes together. And I thought that this was well written. My mother doesn't have a lot of respect for shoe shiners, so, I think you're very cute, but I can't date you. And him being like, your mother is also this working class immigrant woman. Why is this any different? And sort of the way that we, coming from, my family immigrated way before I was born, but sort of that whole idea of like the class structure within like the immigrant society. And I thought that was all pretty interesting and pretty like nicely, subtly handled. And then we get to Vito at the restaurant, and I both like this and dislike this because I disliked it because it was so stereotypical and he's just always at the fucking restaurant for the whole episode. But I did like sort of the sensuality and like tactile nature of the fact that they're just always eating and the nature of the food. And then like when he pours Jaime a glass of wine later on in the episode, that just feels like such a great show don't tell moment as to what's happening. And I thought the food was a pretty cool metaphor for power and like very mafia movie trope. So I did like that, actually.
Yeah. I know someone who once described James Gandolfini on The Sopranos as always angry at the food.
That's
just like
interesting.
He eats it with like such intensity.
Yeah.
And it was such like a bit like food is such a big part of, I don't know if it's part of that culture or just part of that like trope.
Well, I think that food is obviously, and I don't think I'm speaking out of turn, food is very much part of Italian culture.
Mm-hmm.
My visit to Italy was very food-centric, and the people who lived there seemed to be very proud and into the food.
Yeah, I
as
think it's just,
well, and my
I don't know that
Italian
they're eating
friends.
all the time.
Well, I mean, certainly Italian culture meals last for a really long time and are very late at night and are more late at night dinner and is pretty important. So I do think that it does have to do with pace of life and the way that these kinds of guys do business. And I didn't mind that being reflected in the episode. Then there is the part where they, well, a few things. There's this train going by, and the whole space rumbles with the power, the potential power, symbolically of Jaime's new life. And then he goes and delivers these drugs to this club guy. And the club guy is racistville, USA, and says, "You people work twice as fast for half the pay." Thought all this was actually like the racism in this episode was pretty well handled because I feel like in a lot of shows like this, you'll get lines that are like, you Cubans, when that's actually not really how racism works. Very often it is like a you people line where it's like almost inadvertent as to the person doing it, and it's has to do with that person. There's an inherent racism to them. It's not like it's not somebody predetermining, oh, I'm going to be racist now when I talk to this man. So I thought that was well handled. And then they go back, and then there's this whole conversation about this character named Louis, who's a clown, and I couldn't agree more. And Louis is such a great mafia name. And I thought that was really fun for me.
I was getting really distracted in this part to figure out who Michael Consuelos reminds me of.
Oh, yeah.
And there are two people that are very different, but it is both. Mainly it is Jonathan Bennett, best known as Aaron Samuels from Mean Girls.
Oh, sure. Yep.
And then also the face he makes when he's mad is the same face Conan O'Brien makes when he's undermined by Jordan Schlansky. Like that, like fuming, but like not really mad because he's clearly acting, but like, ugh. Like it's the face that Mark Consuelos was constantly making the whole way through.
There are
And it,
similarities to their facial structure, which is really fun.
once I figured out that he was reminding me of Conan O'Brien, I was like really distracted by
Yes. Different type of performer, Conan O'Brien.
this. Yeah,
Although I'd
but
love to see Conan O'Brien on Riverdale, I'd be totally
both
down for it.
undermined by people of Italian culture.
So then, we get to this date where we get to see young Pop. And like, I feel like they kind of made young Pop's moment a big deal when like we get it and we don't totally care. But that's fine. And then they talk about how they want to live in a penthouse in Manhattan. Join the club, honey. Not the most specific, but that's okay. And then Hiram is under arrest. Big surprise.
And he wants, this is when he talks about changing his name,
No, it's later.
which it doesn't, he talk to her about it like on the date and then it's like a whole thing.
No, it's in the next act. It's in the next act, I promise you.
Okay. All
Yeah.
right.
So then, we get this scene. This is very like mafia movie trope where Jaime doesn't rat out his employers, and then Hermione goes to Vito and tells him what's going on, and then Vito bails him out. And then Vito invites him to the inner circle because he can trust him. But, basically, Vito is grooming him. And this is kind of interesting. This surrogate father figure, and then what ends up happening is, I think, a little on the nose, but really fun.
Yeah, also it was so like the way he was attaching himself to Vito made it seem like he had like a really bad father. But like his dad was perfectly lovely and like trying his best.
Ish. We're going to talk about this in the next act. Because his dad does something actually pretty revealing that is very much in the vein of the way that Hiram behaves on the show, which I thought, once again, was like fairly good writing. And it's only a little nugget, but I think it leads us to believe some different things about that character, Javier Luna. So then we've got the name change. And this is good because it explains why this Latinx character has such a white man name, which has always been really odd for us on the show.
I think they've talked in the past about how his name had been Luna and he changed it.
Oh, yeah, because her, you know, Veronica's name for a while was Veronica Luna in tribute to her family heritage. Yeah,
but this leads her to grandmother. An insane scene in the classroom.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
So if you'll notice, the teacher calls roll call and does everyone's first name, last name. She says, Jaime Luna. And he says, no, it's Hiram Lodge.
Yeah.
And then she's like, well, did you go through the proper channels with changing your name with the office? And this is where it really breaks down for me. So I would assume if she's like doing an out loud roll call that includes first name, last name at this point in the school year, she must be a substitute.
Yeah, totally.
But then why does the substitute know the entire name change process of a high school?
Well, she didn't actually say of the office. She said, did you go to like City Hall and do it?
She said, and like take it to the office. Like, she, oh, really? I remember very specifically her giving like the school's protocol and not like the legal protocol.
Oh man, that's real dumb. Yeah.
So I don't know who this woman is.
Yeah, she's like Little Miss Protocol.
Is she face blind? So she had to do with this, but like even adding the last names in a roll call like that? How many Jaimes were there?
Yeah. Probably only a few at that school, if not only one. Yeah.
And I gotta say, as someone who had the same name as a lot of people, you know when it's gonna be you because they're going alphabetically and you've learned everyone else's last names.
Yes, totally. And then you're ready for it. You're ready for roll call. Yeah.
Yeah. It was churlish.
You're right. You're right. It was churlish. You're right. How dare.
What a substitute.
So then the next scene that is, to me, important. I mean, then we've got that fight scene and bloody, bloody blue, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And we've got the renaming process and all that. But then Hiram goes back to his dad, to Javier, to have a conversation. And that's the scene where Javier calls Hiram, you're a sad, stupid boy. And that, to me, feels very Hiram-y in terms of emotional manipulation and makes me understand more that this is a difficult situation. This dad is not totally a paragon of virtue, like if you're going to say that to your son. It's a manipulation tactic always if you're calling your son sad and stupid, like it's not. So that I thought was interesting. And then, you know, he goes and talks to Vito where he's very milquetoasty.
Just to backtrack for a second, I think the reason I missed Hiram saying that is that because I'm fairly certain that is the apartment from the show Love, Victor.
Oh, and great. And they're just there and they're shooting. Yeah, they're saving sets or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, Greg Berlant is just like, I like this one apartment. Let's keep using it.
Yep, let's shoot there.
But we'll make it nighttime for Riverdale. And so it'll be different.
Well, you know, they might have at this point their company just a whole bunch of, you know, they're renting out all the space and they're just doing it. Yeah. You know, and they're probably shooting. They probably have an empire in Vancouver at this point.
Well, I know they have like, I don't know if it's still there. CW had like a compound at one point that had like the housing and this like the sets on like the same little campus.
That's wild.
For all of their shows. And like Love, Victor is not CW, but it is Greg Berlanti.
Yeah.
And so it probably is, but it is very weird that like it was like a little company town.
Well, That's very often the best way to save money. And Vancouver already is a cheaper place to shoot. So I'm sure that CW is doing really well. It didn't mean that they could pay their writers anymore, obviously, but whatever. Anyway, so then we get this Dick Tracy style drive-by shooting, which is like kind of the most cartoony part of the episode. But I was thinking about it and thinking about the audience that this show is for. And it's actually a really good way to use this kind of mafia trope in a way that isn't too scary for the younger viewers. Because I was thinking, like, oh my God, they're gonna they're gonna take him behind an alley and like knife him or something. But that's actually a little too much for this show. So the
Is
drive-by makes a lot of sense. Yes, I feel like they wanted to make it a very sort of a moment in the episode, and I feel like if they were to do that kind of thing, they would have had to have done it off camera and then have Hiram find him. And
Yeah,
that
I mean,
feels a lot darker to me.
they beat people up in alleys all the time. I guess like it would be one step, like the stabbing would be one step further, but also like how old are these kids? And also they're used to gun violence now. They all have their like school drills, so
Sure. Yeah, I don't know. I thought that the shooting was, yeah, like I got why they did it. And then we get the first appearance of special guest star, what's her face? Hermione, the woman who plays Hermione.
oh yeah, is this wait? That I believe is right after we meet Dr. Kirtle Sr.
Oh, I didn't realize. Oh, yeah, Dr. Kirtle Sr. was there
He was like from behind. It was
because
not a moment, but I was very excited to see who I can
yes.
only assume is Dr. Kirtle Sr.
Yes. And then we get Apollonia Gomez, which is a great fucking name.
Oh
Oh my
yeah.
God, Apollonia Gomez. That's so good. Marisol Rodriguez, or Marisol Nichols. Marisol Nichols, yeah. Which is, it's great to see her. She's good in this episode. You can tell she's enjoying being back for like three scenes, but not having to deal with the show, which is great. And then we get this funeral scene, which I thought was interesting because we get this moment specifically with Penelope Blossom saying, young Penelope Blossom saying, you're dating a thug, you're with a thug, and I would never be with someone to advance my family's standing. And that is her whole MO. So that's so hypocritical and just, I think, shows a lot, it said a lot about class discrepancy. Penelope's allowed to sort of live in this world of denial because she's, coming from this rich world.
Wasn't she adopted when she was like 10?
Yes. Yeah.
So she's been there for like 3 years.
No, she's been there for five. No, you're right, you're right. But yeah, but like this has changed her mindset a lot compared to what's going on with Hermione in this scene. Then we have, this scene where I thought it was going to go the way of that Vito just had Hiram, basically by the balls, and that this is going to be kind of it for Hiram for a long time. But I did appreciate the reversal. I thought it was really fun where Hiram then asserts himself and kills these gangsters in order to break free of this cycle. And then Hiram basically takes over the operations that he's smarter than anybody gives him credit for, which is fun. I think that's a fun plot twist.
Yeah, and I will say he shoots them, he's covered in blood, and he comes home to his mother with milkshakes that he's going to put in the fridge.
Yes. Yeah, put the milkshakes in the fridge. Yeah.
Which, like, I mean, it will save them for a little bit longer, but like milkshakes are you gotta drink it now beverage.
That's a good point. That's a good point. A milkshake after a day is not a milkshake at all. That's true.
No. I mean, you can put it in the fridge, but it's gonna give you like half an hour.
Yes. And then we get this cool transition to the adult actors, which I appreciated. And then, they're off to NYC, and quote unquote, the rest is history. And I'm hoping for a sequel episode at some point that is Hiram's exploits in New York, just because I was like, oh, I kind of want to know what happened to him in New York. You know, did he transition into being a more legit businessman? How did that go for him? I'd love to see kind of a maybe a Wall Street tribute or some tribute or something like that, you know, in a New York episode of this show.
Yeah, at the same time, I'm done with Hiram about flashbacks.
Oh, I'm not. I kind of want a spin-off show, to be honest. I think if this is more interesting, I think this is the most interesting Hiram has been for the entire series, quite frankly. This is not just mustache twirling boring guy. This
Yeah.
is like a young immigrant kid who's, you know, trying to make it good in a very difficult situation, which I just think is at least more interesting and more
Yeah.
identifiable and, you know, relatable, you know?
Yeah, I just don't know that they constantly need to be humanizing villains. I mean, Riverdale doesn't do it a lot. They usually just let villains be villains, but like,
That's
it
true. But that's the
doesn't need
thing,
to
like
happen.
I'm so sick of Hiram being like, and then you're going to shoot Archie for like no reason on the show, which happens so much on the show. All of a sudden Hiram's like, and take her out and cut off her hair. Like I feel like that's Hiram's whole MO with all this
Yeah.
shit. And I like it so much more. I like this version of the character a lot more, actually. Then, you know, we get sort of back into the present day, and then we get a scene that's a lot of messy exposition where Hiram's like, this is why I built the prison, and this is where the Palladium is, and blah blah blue. And it's like, okay, that's fine. All right. Then we get this scene that I think is really, really fun, where he kills Vito.
Yes. With a silencer, which from what I understand does not make the pew 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 noise it did on the show.
Oh, how dare I! That's such a movie trope that that's the
It
noise a
was like a
silencer
full
makes.
like Star Wars pew 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 sound.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was fine, that silencer sound. It went pew. But then we get the cycle is broken because Hiram lets Reggie go. And I thought this was also an interesting twist and made sort of this whole episode about breaking cycles of abuse. And Hiram also doesn't want Reggie to kill him one day, which I think is totally cool. And then Reggie ends up basically parenting his father at the end of
Yeah.
this episode, which does feel like, yes, this is a growing up moment where he realizes he's the bigger man and he needs to forgive his father, and then also just like, hopefully Reggie will call the shots at the car dealership. But I hope this isn't the end of that arc for Reggie, which it probably
Yeah.
will be, knowing the show.
He said like he said it's okay. And I'm like, it's not really okay. Like he didn't have to forgive his father. Like he just did. Like his father didn't really do anything to earn forgiveness.
His father didn't earn anything to earn forgiveness, but sometimes being the better person is the way that you, for lack of a better term, exert control over the relationship. And I'm not saying that meaning that Reggie's doing anything nefarious here. I actually don't think he is. But it's just like him being like, I really see your faults, and you know your faults no longer control me or this relationship. I get it. I get it.
Yeah, I think like I would have liked him more like letting go and just like shifting the relationship he and like the way he sees his father as opposed to like forgiving his father, which is
That's
kind of what he
fair.
did. And
That's fair.
I think that like he can take control and like have his dad stop running his life without forgiving him.
Nope, I see where you're coming from there. Yeah, I mean, that would have been a meatier scene, and it also would have been better.
It also would have made sense, and they
It would have
maybe should
made
have
more
done that. So,
sense, yeah. But we needed to cut to Kate. We
The
needed to
Real
get
Housewives of
to
New York.
Real Housewives of New York. She's a housewife, right? She's not a mob wife. I
No,
can't remember.
I believe it's Real Housewives because Andy Cohen came and invited her.
Oh, and Mob Wives isn't an Andy Cohen thing. Only
No,
Housewives
that's,
is. Got it.
yeah, I
Okay.
believe Mob Wives is Viacom.
Got it. Okay. Got it. Got it.
I
Got it.
believe.
So she's a housewife. So we get to see like a scene with her on an episode of her show where she's talking to Ronnie, but the scene isn't really shot like reality TV. It's just shot like another scene from Riverdale.
It,
Right?
yeah, it was different than Riverdale, but it was not like Real Housewives-y, and like it was relevant to us, but that's such a weird conversation to have on that show. Like, most of the shows are like group scenes or like way juicier than that, but this is like about someone who's not.
It felt really intimate for a reality show. Yeah.
With someone who's barely on the show. And like, they have those moments on the show when it's like their husband's like going to prison or something.
Yes.
Or like, if it was this like big like realization, if like they suddenly like opened up with each other about Hiram like seriously abusing them.
Yeah.
But this was just like, he's annoying. And they're like, yeah, but like not laughing and like not drinking and just like, like in a very generic restaurant. Like, it was very weird.
I agree, absolutely. It was off for sure.
It was not revealing for the audience at all.
At all.
And it was not funny to make up for it. It was not dramatic. It was just a weird, it was the Truman Show of the Housewives.
Agreed. that being said, it was really weird. Like, part of me was like, it's almost like Hiram is watching the other characters in an episode of Riverdale.
Yeah.
Which is it was a little disassociative. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, if this begins, and I mean, this is me giving the show a lot of credit where credit is not due. If this begins a transformation in him where he becomes a good guy, and like better to his family, because he's not nice to them. That's the thing. He doesn't treat Hermione or Veronica well. That's the thing. So like, if this is the beginning of a gradual shift throughout the rest of the season that they write properly, I'm all for it. But we will see if this ends up not being mentioned for four more episodes, and then it's all of a sudden he's back with Hermione for the end of the season, and Hermione's like, I've forgiven your father, he's certainly changed, or whatever. I'm not that into it, but knowing what we know about Marisol Nichols's contract and stuff, that's probably not gonna be what they're gonna do, because I don't think she's really on the show anymore.
No,
but anyway, you know.
And then he calls Hermosa, or Hermosa calls him, right?
Hermosa calls him,
yeah,
and he thanks her, and we recognize that this was Hermosa, and it means that they didn't have to get that actor back and get her quarantining and COVID tested and all that, which I get.
Yeah.
But for more casual viewers, I'm sure that they were like, who the fuck is this woman? Like, I'm sure.
I was for a minute.
For me too, I was like, wait, is this Veronica? Is this Hermione? First I thought it was Hermione, and I was like, oh, no, it's Hermosa. Okay, that's fine. Like, whatever.
Yeah, well, Veronica and Hermione couldn't have called because they were watching some weird live version of Housewives.
Was it live? I didn't realize
that. They didn't say that, but it was presenting like it was, like, I think just like the camera style was so like weirdly edited that it felt like maybe it was live.
Oh man.
Like, it reminded me of that scene. This is dumb. When that guy like changed his mind on The Bachelor, and they like filmed him live action, like breaking up with the girl he had picked.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like very poorly edited because it was like in real time.
Oh man.
Whereas they normally do much better editing because they have months on end.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like set up the same way you can do like sports or news, because there's like a thing to focus on. They were just like walking all over this apartment with like no regard for the cameras.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I mean that's probably putting too much faith into Riverdale.
Well, you know, but that's what we do, because we're trying, you know, we're trying to get through this season and this wonderful creative project we do together.
We're trying to help them justify their actions.
Yes.
In a way they are not asking us to.
That's, yes, well put. So that being said, speaking of justifying actions, who's on your power list?
It was very hard to do this week.
Not for me.
Okay, well, my number one was Vegas.
Sure.
My number two was baby Veronica, who we saw very briefly at the end because her existence moved him back to Riverdale. Which is not true, because it took like 15 years, but in theory, it like changed his life around.
Wow, you're getting really deep with this, Kate. I'm really impressed. Yeah.
Thank you. And then after that, I had Hiram because the episode was about him.
Yep.
And then I had Reggie because he was also in this episode.
Yeah. For me, Hiram was number one. Reggie was number two, and then I had Hermosa as number three because it turned out that she instigated a lot of the plot of this episode
Wait, did she? Is
behind the
that what she
scenes.
talked about? I didn't absorb anything other than it was her on
Well,
the
yeah, no,
phone.
just that Hermosa found Vito,
Oh, that's
which
okay.
allowed Hiram to have his closure, which to me felt powerful. Who do you have a crush on?
I have one crush this week, and it's I wrote teen Hermione, which is Veronica, but it's teen Hermione.
Yes. She was on my list as well. I thought that Camila Mendez was great in this episode. She's a really good actor. I really like her on, with everything she does. And then I had young Fred, the one shot of KJ in this episode.
Being real mean in the classroom to the substitute.
Yes, to the substitute, to Little Miss Rules, Little Miss. I am guessing that it was hard for at this point. It's probably a little hard for KJ to play that role. And it's probably why they didn't write him more into the episode. But I appreciated seeing that character, and I like it when KJ plays that character. And then my number one crush was Jaime. Not Hiram, but Jaime when he was young and scrappy. And they dressed him really well, too. I just thought
They
the
did,
clothes
yeah.
were great, and I think that Mark was really great in the episode and just a total little cutie pie. So yeah. Next week, what's on tap for next week?
Reservoir Dogs.
Is it called Reservoir Dogs?
Yep.
Oh boy. And then there's that show right now that's called Reservation Dogs.
I know, which I watched like half of them, wasn't paying attention, but I really should because I like the
Apparently
premise and
it's
I like the
great.
people making it. Yeah, I mean, I like the people making it and I like the premise, so
Yeah,
I should really
totally.
check it out,
Yeah,
but we'll see if I do.
absolutely. Sure.
I've watched last night's Ted Lasso 3 times already, so that's where I
Oh,
am.
can't wait to get caught up. That's a show that deserves our fan podcast, let me tell you.
I had four people yesterday send me text messages about yesterday's Ted Lasso.
And that being said, thanks for tuning in to another episode of XOXO Riverdale. If you liked what you heard, if you w liked what you heard, and also just really full disclosure, we're totally caught up on Ted Lasso, the two of us. If you want to text us about Ted Lasso,
Please
message
do.
us about Ted Lasso on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. We are there. We're also happy to talk about Riverdale with all of you, obviously, and subscribe to our podcast. Thanks so much. We didn't do this last week.
I
Thank you
know, it took
to
up.
Anjali Mercado for editing and rocking it, and to our theme song writer from 78 years ago, Louis Aronowitz. Thanks for tuning in.
Yes,
I'm
thank
Louis
you. We'll
Pearlman.
also talk about the White Lotus.
You will. I'm not caught up on it yet.
Oh my God.
I'm Louis Pearlman.
I'm Kate Batter.
Bye.